And good morning, everyone. Welcome back to Community Living Radio. And well, if you're here in Vancouver, I guess you're experiencing a bunch of rain right now. It's pretty wet out there. That's one of the joys of living here in this particular city. The rain, liquid sunshine, as I like to say. So, because we can't let anything else take our happiness away from us. We have to keep on top of that and keep it deep inside of us, right? So, today's guest is Jen Tracy, Jen DeTracy. Jen DeTracy is a strategic alchemist, a published author, and one of Canada's top marketing experts. I think she even worked with a superstar musician. We'll ask her about that in a bit. Jen specializes in customer engagement and customer retention. I got some really good questions for her about that sort of thing too. Jen is also a founder of Lift Strategies, a company that helps business owners put effective systems in place so that their business has the best tools to succeed. Her proven 5-step strategic sales and marketing process, she's trademarked it, very good. it's called the Lift Process, has helped thousands of businesses in boosting their bottom line. Okay, some of the things that aren't in here. Jen does have a hidden disability, fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue, and she is this successful. That is amazing. That she is able to do all these sort of things. So, a warm welcome to Jen. Are you there?
I am here. Thank you, Michael.
So, that is amazing stuff. Totally amazing stuff. It's kind of interesting that you talk about customer engagement. In some ways, I help people set up things like different thank you cards and things like that. They go out to go back out to their customers as consultants that help make people feel really warm and welcome.
And yes, that's so important.
Yeah,
we all want that, don't we? We all want to feel. Mm-hmm. We all want to receive warm and welcome in our lives.
Yeah. Oh, looks like I already. Jen sent me a list of questions that to keep me on track, because everyone knows and listens to the show, I'll get off track and just go on a tangent. And I think we already answered question one, didn't we?
Well, sort of. Actually, I just like to comment on that just a little bit more. Yes, actually, I have two invisible disabilities, and one is dyslexia, and the other one is fatigue. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so it wasn't fibromyalgia then?
I live with MS, yes, multiple sclerosis.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know, they're all kind of gangled together in some way, shape, or form, that's for sure.
Because, correct me if I'm wrong, like most of the neuro disabilities like fibromyalgia, MS, and alike, they usually there's a chronic fatigue that comes along with it because your body doesn't turn off correctly.
Yeah, it's interesting. I saw an incredible movie called Unrest, which is about fibromyalgia, and really explains it well, which is when you get to a certain point, you hit a wall, and if you don't stop and rest, then your body kind of can collapse. I don't know if that's the case for everybody. With dyslexia, I don't know if it's that extreme. I'm very fortunate in that even though I live with fatigue every day, I'm still able to do many things as long as I structure my day in a way that I can manage my energy. And you and I had a good chat about energy management when we talked last, and I think that, you know, that is really the key.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. Now, okay, all the success and everything, they do, all those things that you we talked about with the customer retention and the and customer satisfaction and all that sort of stuff, right? You have dyslexia, which means you have trouble reading. Is that correct?
Yeah, you know, and yes, well, you know, it's a combination of things. It's just like when I try and dial phone numbers, sometimes I'll have to dial three times because I mess it up. I might transpose numbers and letters, and I'm a slow reader. However, I would say on the spectrum of dyslexia, I'm probably a 3 out of 10 in terms of extreme. So I'm on the lower end, but mm-hmm. yeah, it still impacts me in terms of I can't see my errors necessarily when I'm typing an email, for example. So, you know, those little things that are hard to pick up in yeah. life or are slightly annoying, right? It has made me a much better oral communicator, you know, and a better listener because I have been really dependent on my listening skills and on my communication skills in order to offset, you know, the reading end of things, in which as a kid I would never read aloud. I just felt so much, you know, embarrassment about it, right?
Yeah, I kind of get along with that one because they even went as far as me in school because they hadn't quite got around to diagnosing dyslexia. They said, well, you know, Mrs. Michael, you know that Michael's never going to succeed but so far. He's always going to have to be some kind of a laborer or something like that because, well, his reading skills just aren't good enough to really hold a decent job. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I think the expectations for me were not very high either, and, you know, by certain people in my life. And it's really interesting because I, you know, if I hadn't been told I had dyslexia, I would have never been operating in that sort of realm, right? Yeah. I had to repeat grade 7. Not really by choice. As an adult, I can see the benefit of having done that. At the time, though, you know, that caused a lot of shame. And truthfully, it took me till like I was 46 or 7 to realize I'm a pretty smart person, you know? So sometimes those things can come later in life. It's interesting. But I've always been very driven and motivated. So I think that has been really one of the, you know, the secrets to my success. And also knowing what my weaknesses were. When I worked in jobs for the first 10 years, it was disastrous. And then I started working at a record label, which we can talk about a bit later. And there I came up with strategies to get certain people to proof my work and do all the stuff that I couldn't do myself very well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was when I discovered my potential, which was like, you know, a very exciting turning point in my life in my mid-20s.
Right. Now, you mentioned strategies, and you're a strategist for businesses. So how did those strategies, I mean, there's a little bit of it, but what are some of the strategies that were really helpful for you? In succeeding, I mean, I'm going to label you extremely successful, and our listeners will figure out why you're extremely successful as the show progresses.
Okay, we'll tease them that way.
Yeah,
sounds
yeah.
good. A little bit of teasing going
yeah,
on.
Keep them listening.
Yeah. For me, you know, I think that I had to first of all figure out what kind of jobs were not good for me to be doing, because in those jobs I was, you know, told I was not focused or different criticisms, when really I was just too embarrassed and had too much shame about saying, hey, I've got this little thing called dyslexia and it impacts me. So that was, you know, confusing for people. So when I went into the music business and I started to sort of come out about that and say, listen, I do have some spelling challenges and stuff, and that wasn't an impediment for them. And I thought, oh my goodness, that's the first green light, you know. And for me, I think it was really about building up my confidence. That's such a huge piece. And working at this record label gave me an opportunity to really kind of freestyle and do things independently, not in a sort of in a box, and I start to see successes, which we can talk about a little bit later. And when I start to see those successes, I thought, wow, like when I'm given a little bit of space around my work, I don't think I've ever been like a great employee per se in some ways, but I'm given space around my work in a job or now in my own business, which I've been doing for over 18 years now, then that's when I have the, you know, can succeed, because I can pay other people in my business to do things that I'm not good at. And I can focus in on what I'm really good at, and then, you know, it's more fun and enjoyable, and people get to benefit from the parts that I'm good at, as opposed to the stuff that I may struggle a little bit with. So I set up my life that way, but it took me a long time to get to that place. I didn't imagine I'd have my own business, and then, you know, I got laid off during the dot-com bomb, and then it's like, oh, what am I going to do now?
Yeah, the dot-com bomb, that was a really got a lot of people, right?
Yeah,
especially entrepreneurs.
It was a gift for me, because it put me into that place of going into researching what I wanted to do next. And I fell into one of those self-employment programs that are funded in Canada, and I had a cheerleader behind me, this woman that was just cheerleading me all the way. And, you know, I thought, well, if it doesn't work out my business, as soon as the EI ends, or if I can't get it off and going, I'll just go back to another job. And I never have ever since, 18 years later. So, yeah, I must have done something right.
Yeah, I would say you've done a few things right.
Yeah.
So, you know, with all that success and everything, of course, sometimes success leads to more work and things like that. Has that fatigue ever impacted your success?
Yes, you know, the fatigue came, in a sense, it probably was ramping up, but it came suddenly when I was actually on a speaking tour in northern BC. I was hired by First Nations Radio up there to speak to their business owners, to people that were their customers that paid for advertising on the radio, or prospective business owners. And I did a 3-day tour. And during that time, I noticed that my energy was really low. And I was like, wow, this is so weird. And I got to go out for a run. And I went out for a run, and my foot was dragging behind me. And then I noticed my hand wasn't working very well. These are both on my left-hand side, so you can imagine I'm starting to fall apart. And by the time I came back to Vancouver, my left lip had drooped. And within about 72 hours of that, I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. And, you know, so when that happened, even though I had fatigue, I just thought, oh, well, it will pass, you know, it's going to pass. I'm not going to have to deal with it anymore. They loaded me up with 3 days of drip steroids. I was a maniac, like the Incredible Hulk for a while, just crazy, like a crazy woman. But, you know, then I realized, oh, wait a sec here, this fatigue isn't going away. And so I think what I realized at that time, the grief of a diagnosis took some time to shake it through. But when I realized, okay, this is something that's going to be part of my life, and then I just did workarounds. I thought, okay, well, first of all, I'm going to pare down on my work, because I was working like 12-hour days, you know, I was being a maniac and having so much fun, and I was at the peak of my career at 44. I was making the most money I'd ever made, and I was doing what I wanted to do, and it was like, wow. And then this kind of happened, and it was like, oh. And so I just started basically napping in the afternoon. And it's like, you know, I felt guilty about it at first, and then I thought, no, I create my own schedule. I'm the boss. No one needs to know where I am or what I'm doing right now. I could be in a meeting with a client for anyone knows. And that is the gift. The gift was that because I had my own business, I was able to start to set things up in a way that was manageable for me. And I have to say that my fatigue sort of improved a bit over time. And then, you know, as I've aged, it's gotten a little bit worse. So it kind of variates, but I'm in a system now. And I make sure that I have breaks and rest, and that has been pivotal to my ability to continue on with my business and my life. And certainly it means that a chunk of my day is shorter because I don't work as much because I'm resting. However, I get to still work, and that is, I'm so grateful to have that in my life. I'm a person where I think that I could have 100 times gone on disability and I would have qualified, and I've said no, because emotionally that would have crumbled me. And so I choose to live with fatigue and embrace my work fully and completely.
Wow. You're making yourself sound like even more of a hero than when I first described. So, you know, you said that you built systems and things like that to help your day move along. What are some of those systems?
I put in place.
Yeah.
Okay. I think, you know, for me, what's really important is, and this is something I learned actually from Brendon Burchard, but I was putting in place before, and he's kind of a high performance guy who's popular among certain people, is to take back my morning. So that usually means stretching, which for people that live with MS, they might be able to relate, or other things that you can get a bit more stiff, and plus, you know, just getting older, right? So stretching is something that I consistently incorporate into my morning, unless I have a really, really early morning session, and then it's very difficult for me to get up in time to do that. And I do sit on a cushion and meditate, ideally 3 to 5 times a week, and I find that is very useful to me in terms of just stopping, because I'm a person that likes to move. I'm a busy person. I don't really like to sit still, and so that's a time to just plant myself in one place and just be still. And sometimes I'll have these huge ideas or thoughts, not that that's really a part of meditation, but I will have aha moments that will come to me that will be transformational. Around a lot of it's around work, because I'm a planner. It's just really a nice thing to do, to light a candle and to sit on a cushion. And I pull these little angel cards afterwards. Today, Michael, I pulled openness and willingness before this interview today, and so I'm you know, setting myself up for that today. Wow. Yeah.
Well, I hope that the angels bring you all that you're supposed to have today, with you being open. That's for sure.
Yeah.
I believe in a lot of the woo woo. So.
Right, where we got some alignment happening here, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's so many things that have happened in my life that I just can't simply explain it away. And I'm a very science-based kind of a person also. So it's like, when you can't explain, there's no other explanation. It's like, okay, fine, you know, we'll go to the woo-woo on this one.
Yeah, check mark beside the woo-woo.
Yeah, exactly. And there's nothing really too wrong with that. Meditation is a really strong part of my life, and it helps. It really helps you get through the day, right?
Yes, so. It can be a good foundational piece, and that, along with, to me, eating well and eating really healthy foods, For me personally, I do stay away from gluten-free for a number of reasons. And also that taking rests, you know, just laying down and getting horizontal. It's amazing how that can, even for 10 or 15 minutes, can be very restorative. Sometimes it will be 2 hours for me and I'll actually fall asleep. So that is the one thing consistently that is built into my day is the rest, even over the stretching and the meditation, because otherwise I'm just a grumpy bear later in the day and I choose not to be.
Right.
By so having the rest.
Let me get to a couple of messages here on a break and we'll be right back with you. Hold on.
Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to Community Living Radio, and I am Michael, and we're broadcasting live from CFRO 100.5 FM in Vancouver. And we're talking to Jen DeTracy. Oh, getting tongue-tied now. That's a new one. And we're talking to her about her strategies for success, even living with fatigue and MS, dyslexia. She uses these systems to actually boost her success and help her get through her day. Now, Jen, when we went to the break, you were talking about nutrition.
Yes, I was.
Yes. Now, I'd like to say that there's a quote from another friend of mine. You can't exercise away a bad diet. So,
yeah,
and it's very true, isn't it?
I would agree with that. Yes. And what are your, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, my thoughts are, I'm very careful about what it is I do eat. I know, it's not saying that you can't have the occasional cookie or something like that, but I'm very careful about how that cookie was made, and avoiding things like white sugar and things that are really overprocessed. So,
yeah, that's good. In my journey, I remember when I first early on was diagnosed and I was introduced from somebody to a woman who had a big TED talk, Terry Walls, who has the Wall Protocol around diet and being able to transform from her experience of living with MS. And I couldn't embrace that 8 years ago. I was too overwhelmed. And actually, I just like to celebrate. I have almost completed 7 days on the Wall Protocol level 3, which is the most strict and diet, with the hope of increasing my energy levels. But I do have to say that I've tried many things over the last 8 years, and right now I'm in a place where my expectations on that are low. I just really want to see how that can change my life. And one of the things about going through that process is getting into a state of ketosis, where your system is where the way that you digest the food and get the nutrients passes through the blood barrier and goes to the brain. Mm-hmm. And so yesterday I peed on a little strip and I was in ketosis last night for the first time. So that was like really exciting and led me to realize, wow, like now I'm really motivated to my commitment to the diet initially is 2 months, but now I'm really motivated because I've just had my first little success, right? And it's amazing how we in life can do something that we want, and it's so easy to quit. But when we have that taste of success, that feeling, the experience of success, how that can really keep us going, whether we have a disability or not. And I find that to be just so such a great reminder to me as using that as a tool to keep going. Now, sometimes that success might not happen for a long time, right? Look at people that write books and take it to 30, 40 publishers before, you know, they get a deal. Tenacity is part of success, right?
Yeah, it definitely is a part of success. One of my heroes in life. People were surprised to find out how long of a process it took Rocky to actually come out. It's like, and did he wound up selling his dog and everything else, but he stuck with it. He just kept going, right?
Yes, so. That's a fantastic story. Yes.
Yeah. So Sylvester Stallone, when you talk about examples of tenacity, he's it. You know how he just stuck with everything and kept going. So
yes, he was determined to reach his dream of that, of not only writing a movie but acting in that movie.
Yes. I figured you would know this story because you've spent time in the entertainment industry, and anybody who's spent any time in the entertainment industry, they know that story.
Yeah, well, yes, it's a very powerful story, and actually, I found out about it more recently, and I was like, wow, you know, that is tenacity.
Yeah. So. Tenacity, of course, it combines a bunch of things, at least in my mind, like focus and resilience and determination. It is combined into tenacity, right? So how
yes.
does that help you?
Well, I think that I've always been really a focused person. I remember a friend of mine was outside my house, and they were coming up the stairs and they were just staring in the window watching me work, and they were waiting for me to look up, and I was just so focused I never looked out the window during, and then finally they're like, okay, I gotta ring the doorbell. You know, it's just, I think in order to really be able to succeed with a disability, even you know, dyslexia, I think I just automatically learned how to focus. Mm-hmm. And that has been very powerful for me. And resilience has been something that I never really would have used that word in the past, but certainly if you own a business, there's going to be ebbs and flows. I mean, it's rare that any business won't have some kind of ebb and flow in it, even if that ebb is small compared to the flow. And I think as a person that has these invisible disabilities, that I realize, wow, you know, I have really built up a lot of resilience. And it's amazing how once we become resilient at one thing or in one area, how we don't lose that. We just keep increasing our resilience.
Right. Yeah. That story you told has been said about me, that when I actually start getting in, especially if I'm editing, they're like, you just kind of disappeared. Where were you?
Yeah, because you're in your zone, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I just think that's the flow that we get into as human beings when we're doing something that we are passionate about, or just really fully engaged in, like fully being present. And that's where that focus comes. And I can't remember what the time frame is, but they say that if you're working on something, whether it's in a job or a project, personal project, or in your own business, is that once you step away from that focus, it can take you something like 10 or 20 minutes to get back into the flow again. And that's why multitasking is not recommended.
Yeah, in some respects, multitasking is kind of overrated, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's tempting. I see multitasking kind of, and I'm speaking from my own experience of my own generation as a 52-year-old woman, but I think that for me, it's multitasking is an excuse to not get something done. It's like procrastination, right? People will, and you know, I'm studying coaching right now, and people will be stuck moving forward with something because they don't get started on it because they're multitasking on other things. And I think that how you can get focused is to just take that first step on whatever it is that you want to do. And, you know, usually when you're in it, that's great. And one of my strategies, Michael, is that I used to, and I still to some degree do this, but in the beginning of my business, I came up with the idea that I used to be a morning person before MS, and I would, when I got up, I would put my attention towards one of the most difficult things in my day, and I would get those things done first when my energy was high and my enthusiasm was also high. And so that might be, writing blogs for the book that I've published, or making difficult sales calls that I'm not looking forward to, or something that requires like a huge amount of brain power. So that was a strategy that I used to use. Now I work, my flow in my work day is a little bit different because sometimes I'll work after I do my morning practice, then I'll have a lunch and a nap, and then I might work a bit more, and I might even work in the evening. I don't work as much as I used to, but that flow is a little bit different now than it would have been back then. So we do change, right?
yeah, we do change. If we did change, something else would happen to us, and we won't talk about that.
Not today, right?
Yeah, that's another topic for another day. Yeah, it's another topic. I've been told that, oh, well, you need to learn to multitask a little bit. And it's like, and I'm like, no, I'd rather just focus on one thing at a time, get it done, and get it done well, than try to do a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And then everything seemed to suffer. It had a little suffer to it, right?
yeah. Then you're just not really... you're not in it fully, and so it's hard to know if that's the best that it could be, right?
Right,
and there is
exactly.
That balance, I think, Michael, too, like, you know, if we talk about the best it can be, is that's a whole another thread, too, because some people that are in business are always waiting for things to be perfect, and they don't have a lot of forward motion, and nothing will ever be perfect, but we can focus and get the job done and be present with what we're doing so that we know that it's going to be the best it can be in that moment, right?
Sometimes that's hard to accept, that it's not perfect, right?
It's hard to accept that it's not perfect?
It's not perfect, but sometimes even the not perfect can be brilliant, right?
There's
an acceptance of there, right? That, okay, yeah, well, I missed that detail, so it's not perfect. How do you deal with that acceptance?
How do I deal with it? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, that's a really good question because I think... when I was told at 5 years old or 6 years old that I had dyslexia, I was like, whatever, you know? But then I was terrified to read in public. And I think that I learned at an early age, based on labels that had been placed on me, that I was not perfect. So I think in some ways I have given myself permission from an early age onward to not be perfect, to be imperfectly perfect, you might say. And so I give myself license for that. It doesn't mean that I'm not a striver and that in that way, but I think as a business owner, if I were to wait till I had a perfect script before making a cold call, you know, I could be waiting a long time for that. And yes, I can make a fool of myself on the phone. There's no question about it. And at the same time,
I've done that too, right?
At the same time, when I was working for the record label, Sarah McLachlan's record label, Network Records, out in Vancouver.
The cat's out of the bag now.
I had to spill it, you know? I had to spill it out. I was making phone calls for one half of the day, which I did not really like doing. And it was hard work. But truth is that that experience I had connecting with people, building relationships without having a visual of people, cold calling, convincing people to bring in records or CDs from a band that they, you know, totally industrial band like Skinny Puppy, or a band that no one's ever heard of like Itch or Mystery Machine or Rose Chronicles. You know, I was selling all the time. I was relationship selling, and that really helped me when I started my own business, because even though I don't go, yay, I get to make cold calls today, I do have the confidence.
I don't think anybody does that.
You know what, though? Once I'm in it, because I like people, right? I like people. Mm. I love people. So for me, having those meaningful conversations are really important. And, you know, at Network Records, I got to, in the afternoon, I talked to the fans. I read their letters. I would have conversations with them. I would get to see how fanatical they were. And that was being on the other side, right? The other side of the experience of being on the phone. And that was really, for me, a pivotal moment too. That sort of transformed my perspective about marketing and really gave me insights into human people dynamics around, not obsession, some people are obsessed, but that how people will give themselves over to music is so powerful, to idolizing someone. It could be a hockey player. In this case, for me, it was music, musicians. And I really built my entire business around certain philosophies that I learned from my days in the music business in my 20s. So I know I'm kind of taking you on a wandering here, but
that's okay. It's yes. All okay. I think you're still kind of on point, though.
Yeah.
So
I think that in this day and age, when we live in the digital media, where people are just using emails to reach out to people and waiting for people to call them, get back to them. And I've heard people complain and go, well, I emailed that person and I didn't hear back. And I'm thinking, well, you know, it's your agenda that you want to hear back from them. So it's your responsibility as a business owner or whoever you are to be the person to follow up, particularly in business, actually, because, you know, I always describe it this way, is when the person I want to reach on the phone to have that conversation with about marketing or sales or my online programs or my book or whatever that is, when they're getting up in the morning, they're not thinking, oh, I want to talk to Jen DeTracy today. They're thinking, while they brush their teeth, they're thinking about all the 10,000 things they have to do in the day. And as a business owner, I think we need to put ourselves into the shoes of the people that we have and the people we want as our customers, and think about what their priorities are, so that when we don't get an email back right away or they don't return our message, that, you know, we can have compassion, understanding that it's our agenda, not theirs.
That is a very important point. I'm going to say this, and then we got to get to a break. When I send somebody an email, I actually call and leave them a phone message. Hey, I just sent you an email about whatever it is it's about, and if you want to get back to me right away and let me know that you at least found the email, then they can call me back. But I leave it out there. That way they, because a lot of times people just never found the email. And that's what the major problem is. It's like you have to tell people they sent it.
It's a great way to do things. And I guess we're kind of like-minded in that way, and that as marketers, we understand that different people respond to different ways of communication. And a double communication is always better than a single.
Yes. with that, we're going to jump to a break, and we'll be right back with Jen DeTracy. Hold on. Okay, and we're back. You're listening to Community Living Radio, and we're broadcasting live from CFRO 100.5 FM here in Vancouver. I'm Michael, and we're speaking with Jen. One day, I'm not going to get tongue-tied. Jen DeTracy. It's the two, Jen and...
Yes,
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people call me Tracy. It happens because of the Jen DeTracy thing. So yeah. I'm called many things.
So, okay, since this is our last segment, you have steps for people. Some of the folks that do actually listen to this show, they may have a disability, but they're also trying to supplement their disability check with a business, like maybe an artistic business or something else where they provide a service to somebody, and they work as much as they can in order to satisfy that customer. And you have some proven steps for a marketing process. So should we go through those?
Yes, that sounds fantastic. So there's five steps in the process. We'll just start with the first one and break it down really easily. And I just want to say for people that are want to start something or already have some kind of product or service, even if they're doing that like 5 hours a week, these principles apply, and there are things that you can consider in terms of making this process of marketing easier for you, more focused, and just, you know, knowledge is empowerment. So the first step is called layer, and I like to compare that to you can compare that to a great Mexican bean dip recipe, you know, where you start off with the first layer, which is the beans, and then you put the guac, and then, you know, a juicy ripe tomato, dice it up and put it on top. That's layer number three, and the sour cream, and then the fromage, the cheese, right? Mm-hmm. And if you think about it, you know, as a standalone, eating those refried beans, they might be okay, but it's the combination of all those ingredients together that makes that recipe taste so good. And the same is true of marketing. If you just have one thing that you are doing marketing-wise, let's take, for example, Facebook, and that's all you're doing, it can take a long time to get traction. And that's only one layer. So it's important to have more than one layer in your marketing. So, I mean, and I just want to say about this, because I was thinking about this the other day before our interview, Michael, was, you know, when I think about Facebook now, it's very multi-purposed, right? Because you've got the Facebook Live, and now you've got the Tell the Story, which goes to people's direct message, and then you've got, you know, the regular newsfeed post, and, you know, so in a way, I would say that if someone was doing all of those things, and I know a woman who's got a very successful multi-level marketing business that is, she can use that. She has successfully used Facebook as a way to leverage success in her business. But she's also going out and networking, going to networking groups and meeting people. It's very hard in a business to live in a silo unless you have tons of time or tons of money, because, you know, you're either going to have to do everything organically if you've got an online store, or you're going to have to pay for ads or a combination of both. So when you think about wanting to sell your product, service, you know, you want to think about, okay, what's one marketing layer that I can do and start to do really, really well? And once I've got that going, what other layer can I stack on there? And slowly you can stack layers. The biggest problem, Michael, is that people, what happens is, you know, we talked about focus earlier, if they multitask and they have too many layers to promote whatever they're selling, often it doesn't get done well and nothing works. And that can be a challenge.
That could be a big challenge. I see a lot of people struggle with that, right?
Yeah. So if they if I recommend to the listeners that either want to get started in this or are, is that, you know, make sure that whatever you're doing it really well. And if there's other layers or marketing initiatives that you're not doing well, like maybe you're not doing regular email follow-ups or you're not picking up the phone regularly or whatever that is, pick one thing that you want to improve and focus on that first. And then as you get that up and running and that's going well, add another layer to it. And over time, it will build and you will get momentum. I kind of look at it as, conceiving a baby. So basically, you know, that little sperm has to go into the egg. And from there, there's usually 9 months of, conception time. And that's the reality is when you're building a business, you're looking at, 9 to 12 months to sometimes even before you see some traction. So patience mm-hmm. is important in that process.
Yeah, patience is very important. Wait, that leads back to our points about tenacity also.
That's right, yeah.
So what would step number two be?
Yeah, step number two is inform, which is understanding what your core message is. And you can't really understand that core message until you understand who are your ideal fans. And this goes back to the music business. When I saw those fanatic fans, if you ever see, for example, a picture, this is going back in time, to the Beatles, and you or a clip of them, and you see how crazy their fans are, you want to, in your own business, make sure, and sometimes this can take time, you won't know it necessarily right away, to find the people that really appreciate your product or your art or your service. And those are the people that are your fans. And once you get to know who they are, then you can really design and write compelling messages through social media, on a website, and so on and so forth, that really speak to those people. And that is the key of inform. So that's step two, is understanding who your ideal fans are so that you can, basically customize your message to them, as opposed to, I hear all the time, oh, everybody's my client or everybody's my customer. And then, once they start working with me, they're like, oh, no, they're not. Because we don't have $10 million marketing budget to have everybody as our customer, like the micro business people.
Yeah. I have a saying when I because we actually do ads on our own ads or advertising on our podcast version of this, which can be found on Spreaker and on iHeart, I have to get people to narrow down. If you market to everybody, you're marketing to no one. Is what
good
I tell
point.
Them.
Yes. That's a great way to express it. So shall I carry on with step number three?
Yes, step number three. Let's see what that looks
step
like.
Step number three. Okay, step number three is frequency. Now, frequency has changed over the years, because it used to be that you could just send out an email, newsletter 4 times a year, and that was good, And now, in the days of social media, if you're doing Twitter or Facebook or Instagram, that can be, some people can be tweeting, posting up to, anywhere from once a day to 10 times a day. And so frequency has changed, but the key is to go back to your layers and look at how frequently are you doing certain things. Like, how frequently are you, if you're going to do social media, how frequently are you posting on the platform that really speaks to your ideal fans? And if you're not doing it enough, then you need to go back and look at, should I ramp this up, right? Or newsletters, if you're doing, for example, onboarding, as people come on board to a website and they sign up for your newsletter, to what frequency are you building that relationship with them? And these are things to consider, that people actually have the capacity to handle more frequency than we realize. Now, obviously, you don't want to be sending someone an email 10 times a day, but having an email go out once a week, or having a series of 3 emails go out to welcome a person and connect with them and make them feel like they made a good choice to purchase something on your website or to come to your art gallery or to have a conversation with you, then that's really good. Yeah.
So What would step number four be?
Step number four? Okay, this one is, I mean, all these steps are important, but this one is vital. And that is that 75% or more of money gets left on the table due to lack of follow-up. So if you're going to start something, like maybe you've talked to someone about your art and they've expressed an interest, but then they don't get back to you, is your job, as I was talking about earlier, to follow up with them and build that relationship. You know, we talk about dating, you know, you don't go from a coffee date to marriage. You don't go from one conversation to a sale. So it's really important to have follow-up strategies in place and, you know, to put that in your calendar or have a customer relationship management system or an Excel spreadsheet or whatever that is. That I see so many small businesses leaving money on the table due to lack of follow-up. So I say to them, hey, we're not going to focus on how to get new customers until we put a system in place for all the money you're losing right now. And that's where the gold is.
Yeah. I really starting to see where your strategies with the customer satisfaction and customer retention really come into play now. So go ahead. We're at number five now, right?
We are at number five, just in time, right?
Yes.
number five is track. If you can't track it, you can't improve it. So often what I find with small and micro business owners, and this is, you know, artists, online business owners, is that if you don't track your results, you don't know what's working and what's not working marketing-wise, right? You don't know sometimes something's not working marketing-wise and you might have been doing it for a couple of years, and it's really hard sometimes to kill your darling, right? But it's really important to evaluate every year, even every 6 months, and look at, you know, we live in a world right now where with email and social media, certain things can be tracked. Other things you might have to track through an Excel spreadsheet or a CR, customer relationship management database, that kind of thing. But it's very hard if you don't have tracking in place to really evaluate, hey, that blog post you wrote, like what was your, you know, what was the traffic on it after it hit? And 6 months later, I have a friend who's an artist down in California. We were like best friends growing up and we still are very close. And she says there's this one blog she has that keeps bringing people to her for astrological readings. And it's, you know, she's had a lot of traffic. So find out which blog posts, if you're doing that, for example, are giving you leverage. Maybe you can circulate that content in other ways, right?
Yeah. So let's see. At this point, because we only got a few seconds left.
Okay.
Okay. What's the best way to for people to get in touch with you if they want to get you to help them with their business in their success?
Well, thank you for asking. So even though my process is LIFT, which is LIFFT, my business only has one F. So like an elevator, LIFT, LIF is in Frank, T is in Tommy, and then the word strategies.com. So liftstrategies.com, and also my name is Jen, J-E-N, DeTracy, so D-E-T-R-A-C-E-Y. So you can just Google me, and I will come up, and we can connect that way.
And trust me, she Googles very well, because one of the things that we do with my business, Depictions Media, is when we bring somebody on, because when we get to the podcast version, we actually have a custom way of tagging things so that it boosts your social media. So I need to know where you are before I start this process to where I think maybe you might be at the end of it, at least for it usually lasts for a few months at least and help boost some sales, right?
Yeah, that's a great strategy. And, you know, one last thing I'd like to say, if I can, and be very quick, is one of the strategies I put in place for myself because of living with fatigue is I work virtually with people. And that saves a lot of time getting up, getting fully dressed, and and transporting myself places. So that has been my mission, to do all my work virtually, and I have succeeded at that. It took a while to get that happening, but that's another strategy that I put in place.
Yeah, and you know what? I know you do a wonderful job, and I look forward to working with you maybe a little more on some other projects.
Let's see what happens. I'm sure we will. Thank you so much for having me on your show, Michael.
Thank you, Jim. Okay, bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Well, so that was Jen DeTracy, and she is an awesome person and an awesome resource. So, she did describe to me some of how her day goes. As we left her, she's probably going to go have a nap. She's on the East Coast time in Montreal. So, with that, we will see you guys next week, and have a great weekend. See you next Sunday. Bye.
My name is Farron, and I am right now at 100.5 CFRO Co-op Radio, which has been in my life all of my musical life.
Well, good morning. My name is Doug Lang, and I am here today to do the third Sunday edition of All Over the Map. And boy, oh boy, I think I got a great show for you. Let's just kick it off here with some orchestral bow-bow.